You know, I taught you that phrase. I said, never let truth get in the way of a good story.
That's right.
Yeah. Every time, 100.
Every time. And 10. Without fail, their knees are bulletproof. Welcome to Coach 'Em Up. I'm Tim Riley. I'm joined with Jake Tura. Jake, how you feeling, dude?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Jake was like 30 minutes late to this podcast because he overslept, which honestly, I don't even care. I've known Jake for so long at this point. I just, you know, Jake, what was your reasoning? Tell the people why it happened.
I just, it was at 10 a.m. The podcast was at 10 a.m. Yeah. And I got up at 10:03.
We were saying it's because it's my show. It would be different if this was like Joe Rogan podcast or something where it was like, you know, it's going to be like a life-changing event, but we've known each other for years.
Yeah.
So there's no anxiety. There's no show anxiety whatsoever.
Yeah. Like with PJ, when I was on PJFs.
Yeah. Probably a little bit of butterflies.
Yeah. I got up like 3 hours before that.
Right.
That was probably earlier than this.
Were you doing the thing like... You know, like you get in your own head and you're like trying to formulate your thoughts. And
No, not at all.
You didn't?
No, because that last trip I went on was maybe it lasted like a month and a half. I was in and out of city so fast. Like I had no time to think.
Yeah.
Really.
Better.
Yeah, I did. So like when I was at PJF, I'm sitting there and like 45 minutes in, I'm like, am I really with PJF right now?
This is happening.
This is pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, it is cool, yeah. Man.
So that was a good way to go about it though, because then the anxiety, if I had it, I don't think anything good comes out.
No. And you know what else, too? Yeah. I think, like, when you try and fabricate or overproduce your thoughts to a point, it's like it's no longer authentic. You're not actually, it's like the presentation of yourself, you know? You almost like, it's easy to slip into, instead of just being Jake and just being like, you know, by program.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, but then the problem, if you seek authenticity, I think that's wrong.
Yeah.
You should, the best authenticity.
You can't seek it.
The best authenticity is you are this way and you can't really explain why.
Yeah.
And then trying to like reverse engineer quote unquote authenticity. I just like, you know, it ain't good.
Yeah.
So, but I think there are moments of like, really good insight where things I can get really excited in the moments where it's like, so when you know someone, it's really good. You get on podcasts with people. I do that with researchers. I'm like, I don't know good questions to ask them.
Yeah.
And it might take me 30 minutes to hit something that they're like, that's what they're passionate about. And then it finally goes pretty well.
For sure.
If it's with one of my friends, it usually goes pretty like, I kind of know what to ask them. I know what they're about, but
right.
That's, I think, the anxiety when I'm hosting a show is like,
yeah,
I don't know what to ask this person
that
they're going to be passionate
about. I don't fucking know this guy.
Yeah. Like, you're not going to get me on and be like, what are the vertical jump keys? Because you know I no longer care about vertical jump. Yeah. Or hypertrophy. How do we optimize hypertrophy?
Right.
Hypertrophy clusters.
Right.
Next question. Yeah.
Exactly. Can I, so it's not, like, over the past few, when we first met, you were like, really, we met because the patellar tendonitis.
Was that it?
World, yeah.
Yeah.
That was like the segue. Because you were like, well, so I'd seen you on other podcasts and stuff because I, like so many other coaches, was just like trying to gain information. I think you had been on, maybe it was Just Fly or something like that. I want to say that maybe. And yeah. And then around that same time, and so I started following you and you started getting into tendon stuff. And let me back up. It wasn't even tendon stuff. It was just jumper's knee, patellar tendonitis. And I had it, right? And I was like on this journey myself of like trying to unwind that mess and find what like really works. And at the time, there was no real clear direction. And there wasn't a lot of good information. At least not good information that was consolidated in one place where you could go and be like, oh, like all of this makes sense and this person's done their homework. It was mostly anecdotal or it was just like, just do some ISOs sometimes.
What was out there for you?
For me, here was the problem for the longest time. It was a combination of things. One, it was like, doing anything to isolate the quad or quad strength for athleticism, you know, because I was trying to train to be athletic, right? It's like, you don't do leg extensions because that's what bodybuilders do. And if you do those rep ranges, you're also bodybuilding, and bodybuilding will make you a bodybuilder, you idiot. And you don't want to be a bodybuilder because bodybuilders aren't athletes, you know?
Yeah.
Which is like, it's so fucking stupid, you know, to just throw the baby out with the bathwater just because but people who are quote unquote bodybuilding do leg extensions sometimes. Absurd. Anyway, so you know, direct quad training, if it's not a lunge or if it's not a compound movement, you're not training. You're no longer, you're getting less athletic, if anything.
I did feel that way when I first was in attendance, though.
Totally.
Because I did, well, no.
That was even, the sentiment.
But even getting into, but even getting into ISOs, knowing that ISOs have this like stress relaxation effect and positive effect for a tendon, I wasn't doing leg extension ISOs for like 2 or 3 years.
You were doing the splits?
I was against it. Yeah, I was against it. I'm like, that's stupid. You don't do that. I was doing the split squat.
And yes, I remember
that. I had a basketball guy who played D3 when he plays pro in Switzerland. He had an ACL tear, many ACL tears, actually two, I think, patellar tendon graft. And one of his big things that got him back was the leg extension ISO. Mm-hmm. And I remember him messaging me, and I was kind of cringed. I'm just like, I don't like that. I don't like that exercise. You know, but slowly it was like you get it repeated enough, and then you try it for yourself. Because Jill Cook was the one who said that's like money for a patellar tendon leg extension, and I don't want to hear that. I don't agree with that.
Yeah,
but I just came around after like 3 years.
Shut up, Jill.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever, Jill. But I'm an athlete, Jill.
But prior, like when you were dealing with jumper's knee,
yeah,
and I was looking in when I started to look into it. I think I never looked into it because I didn't know where to go. And for me, I just came across, one of my friends sent me a video of Keith Barr. And then I watched that Keith Barr video, and somehow that turned into Jill Cook. I don't know how I found out about Jill Cook. Mm-hmm. And then it was like Keith Barr and Jill Cook were the starters for me to give any information on tendons, because up to that point, I couldn't find anything. I didn't know where to go. There was nothing out there that was even useful for any of the science of tendons. Maybe I just couldn't know where to look. I don't know.
Well, so for people who might not know, can you give like the rundown on who Jill Cook and Keith Barr are?
Yeah. Okay. Keith Barr, researcher in California, but they're very different. I mean, Keith Barr, his big message that I took was when you do something fast, like jumping, you do a fast motion, the tendon, it's a completely different effect on the tendon than something slow, like an isometric or something slow, like a lift. Completely different effect. Up to that point, I had never heard that in my life. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Because the video that fed into that was a Cal Dietz video saying, when you lift weights, you get a strong muscle, but you don't get a stronger tendon. When you do plyometrics, you get a stronger tendon, but not a stronger muscle. Which I was fascinated even hearing that.
Right.
This fed into Keith Barr because my friend sent me, was like, that's not really true. You need to look into this Keith Barr video. And then Keith Barr, it got a little deeper where it's like, you can't necessarily just say lifting makes muscle strong, plyometrics make tendon strong. Because then I'm like, does lifting doesn't do anything to tendon?
Right.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
And then does plyometric not do anything to muscle?
Right.
Like, that
doesn't make any damn sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So Keith Barr had it on, and it's really based around tendinopathy, because if someone gets tendinopathy, you got to treat them differently. Someone doesn't have a tendon pain, just do normal good training. Do some lifting because you want them to get stronger. Do some plyometrics because you want them to get explosive. Everyone knows that. But someone gets in pain, then you need to start looking at the plyos like a jump for the patellar tendon. It causes the whole thing to stiffen up. And if you have pockets of degeneration, or you have like a compromised tendon, the idea is those pockets get squeezed when you jump because it's so fast.
Yes.
And like maybe that's what's like partly causing the pain, because you're compressing an area of the tendon. Pain is still mysterious. So like, I don't want to, it's just like kind of this idea people can paint in their head of what's going on with the structure when you do something fast. Why does something fast hurt? And I think that's what it is. Versus if you go and do a slow lift, it doesn't really hurt your tendon. If you do a slow isometric, or you do a slow controlled lift, heavy load, super heavy, it's not really going to hurt your tendon because you're not getting that squeeze on those areas. You're not getting that fast squeeze on the tendon. Everything you do that's high intensity is squeezing the tendon and making it thin out, but it's the speed of how that's happening. So like the isometric can squeeze it more slowly. And part of tendinopathy is you get more water in your tendon. So like you have all these fascicle, you have many fascicles running through. Within the fascicles are fibrils. millions of fibrils that are running like end to end on your tendon, and they have they're perfectly oriented like next to one another. But when you start to get a tendon pain, water comes in and they swell, so they are now further apart. And your tendon, when you try to use your tendon to jump, it sucks. And I'm like, I think because the units that are getting pulled on, they're spaced apart, and then the performance of the tendon is terrible. So it's like a big part of tendinopathy is wanting to squeeze the water out. It's just like if you do the jumping stuff to squeeze the water out, it hurts. If you do the isometrics and the lifting to squeeze the water out, you feel better, and then you can actually go into the jumping and stuff. So like, but
so you need to wring the towel out.
That's kind of it. Yeah, yeah.
And it's just a matter of, it's the method by which you.
Yeah, and that's probably most cases of athletes who are jumpers, is like you're consistently getting the water come in, like the swelling in your tendon, because you keep provoking it. Mm-hmm. But if someone's like an old 60-year-old person with like super degenerative tendon and they hardly use the thing, I don't think that's a water thing. So there are differences with tendons, depending on like who the person is. So that is a big part of it, is getting that water to come out. I think it's just maybe it's a natural response to injury. You think like when you sprain your ankle, you get all this swelling, because the body wants to come in and heal the area. I think that's what's happening with the tendon when you overload it, is the body sends all this fluid. And with the fluid, with those fibrils, there's proteoglycans that are connecting all of the fibrils. Mm-hmm. You get more proteoglycans, and then more water comes. I just think it's this response of, yeah. And the water will actually, you have an acute overload. Like back in the day, you go do a dunk session, your knee's blown up for like a week. Yeah. But if you actually do nothing, like just walk around, do stuff over, it gets better and better and better.
Yeah.
The water is like slowly coming out anyways, because you're getting muscle contraction. You're just giving it time to go about its process. It's just that if you do nothing, because you have pain there, all the areas around the patellar tendon, this tiny little area, and it hurts in that one tiny spot, but now your quads turn into nothing.
Yeah.
Now your calf turns into nothing. You have no calf. So it's this focus that I had when I jumper's knee, was I want to focus on that little tiny dot where my patellar tendon hurts. Mm-hmm. That's the only problem I have. I want people to massage it and they would actually do ultrasound, because it did heat, I guess. Like you could do ultrasound on it for heat.
Okay.
Put ice on that spot. I only focus on that little spot, whereas in reality, I'm like, I need to ignore that tiny spot and work on everything else that is obviously a problem. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So that.
Can you talk about that? Like, so the typical approach, because a lot of people who are going to listen or watch this either train people who have Achilles or patellar tendinopathy or some sort of tendon issue. Maybe it's a groin situation, or they themselves have either gone through that or will. So can you talk about what's still the typical approach in most cases regarding like, oh, this thing's cropped up, and that being usually it's like, stop doing what you're doing, rest completely, stay off of it, and kind of hope and pray it gets better.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not, that's not the right way to go. Yeah. Because that is definitely not the right, like to stay off of it and rest it. Definitely not the right way to go for a tendinopathy, because if you look at a tendon under some form of imaging, it's like a healthy linear pull. Like the thing looks like it's supposed to work like this, you know, because mm-hmm. it gets pulled that way, like a patellar tendon, Achilles tendon. If you get tendinopathy, you get like, it gets really messy in that one area. Like it no longer gets pulled like that. It's just like a scar type looking area. If you take a wild animal, put them in a cage for like a month or two, their tendon will look the same as the tendinopathy. You basically get tendinopathy by immobilizing your tendon.
So by doing nothing.
By doing nothing,
you get worse.
Yeah. Well, the problem is it's already
shielded. Imagine that.
It's already shielded. And like you think of the water coming in to that specific area. It's like you have a good linear pull. And then in this one spot, it's just like swollen and like nothing's good about it. And you could actually get, I think this is where you get like calcifications can come in, fatty acid infiltration. Cartilage cells can start coming in, like so like all these bad things can happen. And I think it's because when you pull on a tendon, that's what's keeping the tendon cells, a tendon, that's what's keeping the collagen lined up like this. When you stop pulling on the tendon, then it's like the floodgates open and all right, everyone else come in, cartilage come in, bone cells come in, fatty acids come in, and then you can get more blood vessels, you can get more nerves, so it's like pain can start to come in. blood flow. All this bad stuff happens to a tendon when you immobilize it mm-hmm. or when you like get tendinopathy. So it's like they're kind of, I kind of look at the two the exact same. On like the middle, you have perfect loading. Over here, you've just completely cooked your tendon by doing way too much. And over here, you've immobilized. You have to immobilize. Like you have, if we're talking about the bad stuff, you have to basically put your foot in a boot, get on crutches for like a month, and your tendon will be awful.
Yeah.
If you have a boot on and you actually still walk around with the boot, you're still getting load on your Achilles.
Right.
So it's like just going for a walk actually loads your Achilles and your patellar to avoid the negatives of complete rest and complete immobilization.
Got it.
In those bad cases, when you really have a patellar tendon, you'll limp quite a bit.
Been there.
So like,
I've been there.
So like you start to think that you're getting some of that pretty bad rest to that area because you're trying to shield it. But you were saying, so like what's the way most people go about the rehab? Yeah, you don't want to rest. Obviously you always want to go to the doctor and make sure there's not something more serious. Like get it, you might want to get it imaged, see if there was like a rupture or see if there's something else going on in the knee. Because many patellar tendinopathies are not patellar tendinopathy. Some Achilles tendinopathies are not Achilles tendinopathy. You want to get a diagnosis, and most people are not smart enough to do that.
To even consider it, yeah.
Yes, and it's kind of based on signs and symptoms, like many of them I talk about, how it's like, you kind of know you have jumper's knee if you're a jumper, and if it feels really bad, but it warms up, you can go dunk, you wake up the next morning, you can't even get out of bed because your knee hurts so bad, probably a tendon pain, those are like the signs and symptoms. Achilles kind of similar, like stiffness in the morning, like that's
For tendons, is that a pretty good rule of thumb?
Yeah, like lower body. I mean, I try to stick with lower body because like patellar Achilles, I know quite a bit about. When you start to get to elbow tendons, shoulder, like some of these things are a little bit more complex. Like recently, you know, I'm talking about the swelling and how tendon gets bigger. Recently, I was listening to a show about the elbow tendons getting thinner with tendinopathy, thinning out. And I'm like, I got to dig deeper, but I'm like, even further validates that lower body tendons are pretty different, can be pretty different to upper body tendons. Although the concepts of a lower body tendon are going to work for rehab for upper body. It's just like there are just little minute differences that like for troubleshooting, because you want to, people have experiences with tendon rehab and you want to like not be like, oh, that really happened. You want to be like, oh yeah, I've seen that before, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to piece together. But yeah, the people, They go tendon rehab and they just kind of rest. I think early on, I'm very against rest, but if it's your first time with a tendon pain, you just had swelling. I think that's it.
Yep.
You just had a bit of swelling in the tendon. It's kind of tender. Give it a few days, take it easy, and it'll probably go away. And I bet you every basketball player in the world has done that many times. They just use common sense. They take a little rest. They're fine. It's the people who have a little bit of tendon pain. They go play again the next day, and they have a little bit of tendon pain. They go play again the next day.
Yeah.
And it's like now I have that analogy with the toast. It's like you're getting a little bit. The white toast is getting a little bit brown, and if you would have just rested when it's a little bit brown, it goes back to the white toast.
But right.
It's like you got the white toast. It gets a little brown, and you keep going and more brown.
Burning the damn
you
toast.
You get black. Yeah. And it's like if you would have just not done that, but probably for us is like we had patellar tendon pain back in the day.
Yep.
I'm gonna go dunk again tomorrow.
I'm gonna go dunk again tomorrow.
Yeah. So you just go down that path probably because of obsession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we say people that want to get dunk or want to get better at athletics, you have to be obsessed. And I'm like, I bet you part of being obsessed is cooking your tendons.
Yeah.
That are involved.
Yeah.
Just gonna happen.
Yep.
So yeah, when people, this is going on many different tangents, but when you asked about people that what they should do with rehab, right?
Yes.
Yeah, instead of resting. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, because like, you have an approach.
I do have an approach. Yeah. And that's what I've laid out for people. If I work like one-on-one or I don't really work one-on-one actually, but like if I do phone consults, like
yes.
I can kind of change things up, but I'm like, I got to give a plan for the general population for people to understand. So I just laid out the 4-stage process pretty much, which is pretty simple, where it's like, if you're a basketball player, let's use basketball because that's like a sport where if you have basketball, if you are a basketball player, you're jumping, landing, cutting, changing direction, doing all these things that just toast your patellar tendon, and you've had the pain for many months. Because mm-hmm. if you had it for a week, just do a little bit of rest, buddy.
Yeah.
I'd be fine.
Yeah.
But like, if you've had it for many months or many years, it's not going away. I'm like, stop. Stop playing basketball. Stop jumping.
Yeah.
Because you don't know how to hold yourself back. Just stop doing those things. Remove them completely. And let's go.
And to be clear, you're saying stop doing the thing that's causing acute pain.
Yes.
Not put your leg in a fucking cast.
Yes. Stop poking the bear.
Yeah.
Stop poking the bear. So with other tendons, if you're a jogger and you're an Achilles runner, you can probably keep running because it's not competitive.
Yeah.
You don't have to go out there. If I'm playing defense on you and I'm going to give it 50% to protect my patellar tendon, I can't do that. I'm giving it 100%.
Yes.
Yeah. But if I'm jogging, you have probably more likely. You're jogging alone. Yeah, I can go do 2 miles. I can go 50% or whatever pace. I don't know anything about jogging. Just but, you know, it's like there's no one.
You can tone it back.
Yes. There's no one standing in front of you that.
Can you talk about the pain scale as it pertains to that?
Yeah. Dude, man, that's. Let me finish the force.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. The pain scale stuff is a pain. It's a pain. Yeah. Because you don't know what someone's pain is ever.
Yeah.
8 out of 10 pain for you is a 1 out of 10 pain for me.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact. But no. yeah. So the four stages. So I'm like, stop doing the thing that hurts the knee, which is common sense.
Yeah.
Stop going out and hurting yourself. And the sign is going to be you can warm up and then go do it, and which is going to hurt you. The next morning, you always are like, oh, it hurts again or it hurts worse. Mm-hmm. I keep going through this cycle. And it's like, obviously, use your brain, buddy. Like, stop doing that.
Cut that out.
Yes. Delayed pain response. Tendon. It's a delayed pain response. That's one thing for us when we got in the field. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know. I'm waking up, my knee hurts. Like, I didn't know that was because I played basketball yesterday.
Yeah.
I was just like, I thought it would hurt while I'm playing, but I felt fine while I was playing. Yeah. That just wasn't common knowledge back in the day. So then I'm like, get on ISOs. Because ISOs are the slowest loading, like very unlikely to provoke pain. But your brain, because I had it for months, your brain doesn't want to load that joint anymore. So we need to get the brain to want to load the joint again. Mm. And isometrics are the easiest way. And if you got on a leg extension, you can't cheat. Because if you shield the joint, if you do like any exercise that's multi-joint, you're going to shield the joint.
Yeah.
And you're going to load your hips or you're going to load your ankle.
You're subconsciously going to find a way to avoid loading the sucker.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's like you want to isolate as much as possible. You want to isolate so you can actually hit the quad, and then the quad's going to pull on the patellar tendon. But a big part of the isometrics is, I think, getting rid of the inhibition from the brain.
Totally.
Because you've had it for many months, and your brain has changed to be like, the way we move now is without our right knee.
Yeah.
That's how we move. Yeah. You know? So it's like, we need to get rid of that and start loading it again. And a part of the isometrics is to get rid of that inhibition to the quad and the knee. Which goes along with that is getting the quad stronger and bigger because people with long-term patellar tendon, you can look side to side.
There's atrophy.
They have a baby quad. so like then once they do the isometrics and they kind of balance out, because I'm like, you got to train side to side, do something for the quad, do something for the calf, the hamstring, do a longer ISO, like a split squat ISO. These are just things I like to do. Once you kind of hit, I call them functional benchmarks, because once your function is not so poor and your pain is stable, then you can move on to lifting. So you start to add in a little bit more speed. So then you add in lifting.
I see.
Yeah, so it's the progression of tendon rehab is kind of based on speed. You start with no speed with ISOs, and then you add in a little bit with lifting. So it's still slow, heavy loads, doing squats, split squats, step ups, RDLs. Like, you're trying to address everything in the legs, both the legs. And then as you progress with the lifting, you're not super weak anymore, your muscles have got bigger, then you go into store and release, which is the speed, which is jumping, landing, change of direction, exhale, decel, and you just progress those things by like doing it at 25% session one, and then when you get to like session six, you're doing 50%, and then 75%, then like closer to 100%, and then stage four is just return to sport, but return to sport and keep stay strong. Like, you have to stay strong through the rest of, I'm basically like, you have the camps of people that have never had patellar tendon pain. Do whatever you want. I don't care. You have someone who had patellar tendon pain in the past. I dealt with it for many months. And I'm like, you are now a different athlete for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You have to pay attention to next day pain every morning. You have to stay up on your weight on lifting.
Yep.
You don't have the luxury. No, you don't. Because it's like because you had it for months, and it's like the brain remembers that pain.
Yes.
And the environment of when you had it chronically is the increased blood flow and the increased vessels, the nerve, with blood flow comes nerve vessels. So it's like, that's what causes the pain. But I'm like, and then that environment of the swelling as well is like, I think it has went away, but I'm like, you had that environment already in the past that I think it's just going to come back. It's just more so likely to come back. So you have to just stay strong. And I don't care how people do that. You can do isometrics, you can do lifting, but just stay strong, stay smart about your loading. You're just a different athlete for the rest of time. The pain scale, you said pain scale. Okay. I want pain. I tell people to keep pain stable throughout rehab. So like you wake up every morning and you just want it to be stable. So it's a, if it's a 5 out of 10, but if it's a 5 out of 10 every morning, but your leg extension ISO is going from 60 pounds to 100 pounds, it's still staying at a 5 out of 10. That's a great sign. The function is improving.
That's progress.
Yes, the function is improving. And I look at pain decrease as a delayed response to function. Like you will get, your legs can get super strong, which will then protect your patellar tendon. Because if you think when you jump and land, your bones are moving and that needs to be taken up by a muscle or a tendon. That length chain is going to be taken up by a muscle mm-hmm. or a tendon. If your muscle is better, your muscle can take up that length chain and your tendon doesn't need to get yanked so much.
Right. So like, your muscle's acting as a dampener.
Yeah, yeah. But it's kind of both because the tendon does that as well.
Yes.
So it's like, yeah. So
there needs to be a relationship.
Better, yeah. So it's like the better your muscle, the better protected your tendon is. So that's why just stay strong the rest of your life. But yeah, so I'm like 5 out of 10, keep it stable. And it's like you could be going for months and getting super strong. All your numbers are going up and your pain is still a 5 out of 10. And it's like, I think it's just going to come down. Just give it time. Just be patient. Some people can go down right away after a set of isometrics. You know, it's like, well, lucky you. You're like, you're among the 2%.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. but some. It's usually function's got to improve and then pain goes down. Now, this is something I play with in my head though, because I'm like, let's go Achilles pain. People have insertional Achilles pain. They make heel wedges because when you have an insertional Achilles pain at the calcaneus. A big part of the pain is compression when you get into dorsiflexion. Mm-hmm. So they've done studies where people have like pretty significant heel wedges to get them out of dorsiflexion. Decreases pain amazingly. So I'm like, they didn't need to do any calf raises. They just needed the heel wedges. Yeah. So they focused on pain and the function came back. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because it's like for us, we're like, pain is stable. Let's improve the function and then pain will follow.
Away.
But I'm like, there are also times where it's like, you could have the pain go away and the function will come back.
Yeah.
I think that's a case of the short-term tendon pain.
Yeah,
they're like,
it's not something that hasn't become chronic.
Yeah, I think it's a case of the short-term tendon pain because those guys, they have that tendon. There's no way they can jump. Again, they warm up, but like their performance is so poor. Give them 2-3 days, the tendon goes away. Their performance is completely back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So I always play with that because I'm such a fan of work on function because you have clear deficits. Obviously, you have a patellar tendon for a long time. Your quad is just nothing. But I entertain that thought in my head where I'm like, what if we just focused on pain? And then they just could go play basketball again, you know?
Yep.
What if we did something for pain and took away the pain and then the function came back? But it's worked at the Achilles and that thing, the heel wedges. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it would be for the patellar tendon. I don't think there is any.
Mm-hmm.
They've also made these nitroglycerin patches that they can put on the skin. And I think it brings blood flow, nitric oxide, does something for the healing process. Another thing, like you focus on pain and people get better. So a lot of people get better with that. You never hear about that. And I think it's because no one makes money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you hear about PRP left and right because they make a lot of money off PRP.
Right.
And PRP doesn't usually work.
Right. Yeah.
yeah. But pain scales, I'm just like, keep it stable. When you're in training, you don't really want to listen to pain because it warms up and you can't trust it. Because you always want to, if the pain goes away and you're like, I feel great now.
Yeah.
I'm going to go dunk. I'm going to go try dunking. And then the next day you have pain again. You can't trust the pain you cannot trust yourself during the session.
Yeah.
You got to listen to what happens the next day.
After the fact.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And then pain is so individual. Like I've had consults with guys where they talk to me for 30 minutes. And at the end of it, I'm like, I just brush up on. So what has been your pain level? No, it's like a 1 out of 10 regularly. I'm like, what are we doing here? Why'd you pay me for this, man? Like that's a psychological problem.
Yeah.
That you want to get your pain to a 0 out of 10.
Yeah.
Like I just don't think you have, if your main goal in life is pain decrease, like when we were dunking and playing basketball, our goal was to dunk and not lose the basketball game. Our goal was not zero pain.
Right.
Yeah, I think you just need
that. I just want to be, for me, it was just take me out of enough pain where I can play and I'm not fucking crippled the next day. I don't mind a little pain. I think there is a, you know, then you get into like there's a difference between health and performance conversation where at some level, if you're pushing yourself, if you're lapping up against what you're capable of from a performance perspective, pain is inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Things are going to, things are going to go wrong. You know, along the way, because you're in the pursuit of pushing yourself to what you're capable of, certainly you're going to miss things. you know, it is a learning process inherent. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I had that conversation yesterday about my hyper specialization in patellar tendon.
Mm-hmm.
Where I look at everyone, I'm like, I don't really have competitors in this space. At least being a strength coach about patellar tendon and the loading, and it's been effortless for me. But I'm like, I had that conversation because yesterday at that seminar, you're kind of guiding the programming of like how to properly do it without messing yourself up, right?
Yeah.
Like the plyometrics, and I'm like, that's amazing for 99.9% of people, they need that stuff. But for me, the 0.1%, I had to toast my patellar tendon 4 times in my life for me to get to this level. So I'm like, no one could have told me something like that because I wanted to dunk. No one could have told me here's the proper way to do things. I'm like, nah, I know better. You know, I'm just like so arrogant and I gotta learn for myself.
Yep.
But I'm like, the knowledge I have of patellar tendon came from toasting it so many times.
Yeah.
Had a coach held me back and said, hey, don't do 5 dunk sessions this week.
Yep.
Only do 1. I would have never learned them as much as I did now. So I'm like, that stuff is great because people you train, you definitely don't want to toast them. They don't want to go off and have to become an Achilles tendon specialist because you ruptured their Achilles.
Right, exactly. Yes.
But,
I've bared the burden for them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've done the suffering myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, that stuff is great. But I'm like, if you really want to learn about plyos, go do them every day to the highest extent and really mess yourself up. And then you'll be like, oh, that's why. Like, I thought of this recently with protein consumption. Like, I'm like 200, 220 pounds. I eat like 220 grams per day. And I'm like, I've never experienced trying to lift and play basketball under like 100 grams per day.
Yeah.
I don't really know what that's like. It's just like an assumed thing where I'm like, I need this protein. And I don't know what the other alternative is.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I think if we did that, we would know what it's like.
Yeah.
Not have any protein.
100%.
We wouldn't recover. I'm just like, I've never like experienced that. For me, it's only been the patellar tendon, like going through the ringer many times with patellar tendon. And it's like that experience has given, I don't know. It's like, if I had never had that, I would not know what I know today.
Yeah.
And it's all because I didn't listen to any, well, there wasn't any good advice anyways, but like I wouldn't have listened in the first place. I'm like, I know better. I'm going to go dunk every day this week on a concrete court and, not be able to walk. Not be able to walk, but I'm still going to dunk tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm going to warm up. I'm going to feel good enough to go and do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I think that's where the wisdom came from for me.
Yeah. It's like the experience.
Just destroying it.
Going through the grinder.
Yeah.
The patellar tendon grinder.
Yeah.
You mentioned, so, you know, the importance of getting and staying strong. So I work, and as it pertains to tendon health and how they both work together, and having a strong muscle works with the tendon to not only protect the tendon, but to help the tendon perform. So I think it's probably more common knowledge that volleyball players get patellar tendonitis all the time as well, because it's a jumping sport. Maybe less common is how frequently it shows up in football, even though it's not really considered a jumping sport, but there is this dynamic change of direction, stopping, starting, and quad, and therefore patellar tendon loading that happens all the time in that sport. Even if it's not jumping, it's still changing direction at rapid speed, and attempting to do it while loading those tissues. What happens, and what I've seen, is that in sports like football, for example, a guy comes in and he can back squat 500 pounds, but he still is experiencing this patellar tendonitis. And then I take a look at his loading strategy as it pertains to that squat, and it is just ass way back behind his heels. There's very little knee bend. And when you break it down, you see it's like, yeah, this person is incredibly strong, but perhaps they're not strong in the places that are relevant as it pertains to protecting that tendon, i.e. the quad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use an anecdote. I got a guy, TQ, he had a knee injury. It wasn't a tendonitis, but he wasn't loading that knee. He can probably trap bar deadlift 650 pounds right now. When I first got him at the beginning of the offseason, I'm not kidding, he could not do a leg extension with 35 pounds. He's 300 pounds pure muscle. And if you looked at him and you saw him do that, you would say strength is not his issue. But I fucking guarantee you, as it pertains to that knee and the function of that knee, strength in the quad is an issue. That's a problem. And then I guess I'm just ranting now. But
yeah.
But as it pertains to the function of that patellar tendon and the knee in general, like where I think it perpetuates when you have athletes who are explosive, who are powerful, is they're able to express that power. And then you have a quad and therefore a patellar tendon that's under equipped to deal with that. And then it gets injured and then they stay off of it. So it becomes less equipped, but they're not necessarily globally less powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And they continue to squat and they continue to get stronger even perhaps, but they're never actually loading that quad and therefore the patellar tendon. And so they're not getting better. It's never going away. They're like, well, I'm strong and I'm doing all this stuff. And it's like, you get them to do a leg extension, like in my example, and it's pathetic. I have housewives, and shout out to housewives, because some of y'all train harder than some of my athletes, that are hammering single leg extensions with 65 pounds easily. And he plays in the NFL. So anyway, I say all that to say, what are your thoughts on that? Yeah. Have you experienced that? Have you seen that? Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I had a call with a guy the other day. He's been doing like 10-pound leg extensions for like 3 months. Very bad. And I'm wondering, like, there's got to be some structural...
Something else is up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's trying to add
power,
more weight.
Power lifter.
He's a power lifter.
He just gets increased pain. So that's a tough thing with pain.
Yeah.
It's a tough thing with pain was like, I don't know someone's pain level, you know? And I'm just like, I don't know if you're just being soft. You need to push through. 10 pounds, bro. 3 months. Like, come on. but maybe it's something special with the leg extension that aggravates it. I don't know. That's a difficult thing. But that's where I go and think something else. But yeah, I think anyone like that super strong, like powerlifters that were super strong and they get patellar tendon pain, hop on a leg extension, they'll do 10 pounds, 30 pounds. It'd be tough. You know, it's like, I think yesterday, we're having a conversation like after the thing about like the future of tendon rehab,
yep,
or avoiding tendon pain, avoiding tendon rupture.
Yep.
Because recently I went through this kind of path of back in 2013. They looked at tendons. They had a different way of looking at tendons, and they said that there's not really any turnover past puberty, so it's kind of static. The tendon is just stuck there.
Can you go into a little more detail about what you?
Yeah, this is gonna relate back to your NFL guy, but I hope I can explain this well enough. Back in, I don't know what year that was. They used to test atomic bombs, so they had this level. It was called C-14 in the atmosphere, and it got into our tissues. It got into everyone's tissues that was around at that time. Mm-hmm. So, if they were testing that today. Or no, it's a tough example to make. So that's why I struggle with it. But I'm like, if you were 20 years old when they were testing the atomic bombs.
Yes.
And now you're 60. We could look at your skeletal muscle and we would see that the levels of C-14 are what they are at the current day. Because the muscle has been turning over like all the time. The muscle is a dynamic tissue. The C-14 levels will reflect what it is today.
Got it.
But if we test you today, the C-14 levels will mirror what it was at the time you were 20, like 40 years ago.
Wow.
In the tendon, because the tendon hasn't been doing anything. The tendon was built by the time you're 17 or around 13, 17, like puberty. It's when you build your tendons, when you build.
So there becomes a place in your teenage years where your tendon's your tendon.
Yes, this was a thing in like, I think it was 2013, they did the study where it was just like, okay, tendon is stuck. When you're 17, when you're done growing, your tendon's done. But then we look at it, it's like, well, no, how are people getting better tendons and how are people having tendon pain? And they, you know, they go on,
right?
They have a tendon pain and they go on and they get rid of the tendon pain and we see changes in the tendon. Like, that don't make any sense.
It doesn't make any
like,
sense.
How is your tendon just static there? So then it was kind of based on some rat and mice research. They found that some of the fibrils got bigger and smaller throughout the day based on the circadian rhythm. So then they looked at the... Instead of 100% of the tendon being static, they were like a very small portion of the tendon is dynamic. And they called it like this sacrificial collagen pool where every day your tendon will, those fibrils will get a little bit bigger to help you prepare for the day. You damage them during the day, they clean up at night and re-go. So it's like you have this idea that you built a really strong tendon by the time you're 17. Mm-hmm. All 95% of it you built, and you don't want to damage that stuff. So that's why you have these, this sacrificial pool that's regenerating every day, so you can damage that stuff. It's okay if you break it because you'll build it back the next day. So it's really dynamics. So it was like you have
it's this, like semi-plastic.
Yes, you have this little portion of tendon, like 3 to 5% of your tendon, which is actually dynamic, and then that's the stuff that's changing. Then I think it was in 2018 they did the same type of study with the atomic bombs, mm-hmm. but they looked at people who went on to get Achilles tendinopathy, and instead of 95% of their tendon being stuck, it was more like 50-50. The tendon had been, instead of the majority being static, it was now only 50%, and the other 50 was like dynamic and consistently turning over. So the tendon was becoming more dynamic. And this was seen, I think it was 10 to 15 years before tendinopathy. So
wow.
I'm painting in my head where I'm like, assuming this tendinopathy came from overload, like overuse overload, this person had been like kind of toasting their tendon. They had just been doing too much training. It's like an iceberg, the iceberg effect they have. The bottom of the iceberg, which you don't see, is you making mistakes with your training, doing way too much training. And then the next thing,
spiking volume suddenly.
Yeah. Or just killing yourself like all your whole life doing too much. And then the next thing was the whole tendon tries to keep up by being more dynamic. Like, or 50% of it, you know? So instead of it being mostly static, it's now like it's becoming very dynamic. And then the top of the iceberg, the part that you see, is tendon pain or tendon rupture. Mm-hmm. Because that's just like some people don't go on to get that. They toast their tendons, they kill themselves, they don't get any symptoms, their tendon's super dynamic, they live their life and they die and they never ruptured or had tendinopathy. But it's like, I think this is a risk factor, is a more dynamic tendon. Because recently in 2023, they did it with tendon ruptures. People who had a tendon rupture, I think it was 16 people, you can take a biopsy of them because they have a ruptured tendon anyways. So they took a biopsy of the ruptured area, and then they took a biopsy of like 3 centimeters above, and they saw both areas had been renewing the collagen, like 50% of the collagen, again, same as tendinopathy, for years prior to the rupture. So it's like, I'm looking at the future of tendon avoiding tendon pain and avoiding tendon rupture, and I'm like, if all these people that go on to get tendon pain or tendon rupture have a more dynamic tendon, that's the sign that you've been just toasting the tendon, just trying to pay keep up. And I think because the tendon is so static, it's like if we think a healthy tendon is static and stuck there, it's not dynamic at all, like only 5%. Because it's not dynamic at all, it's super strong because you're not breaking it down and building it up all the time.
Yeah.
If you're breaking down a tissue all the time, it has to be weaker.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the tendon that's overloaded, and you'd think, oh yes, we're it's more dynamic, this is a good thing. I'm like, that's a very bad thing for a tendon.
Yes.
Because that makes it weaker. You're breaking down collagen all the time and building new collagen.
It's like the concept of overtraining. It's just applied more specifically to a tendon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So this is on your NFL story. I'm like, I think this is the future of like, you could actually you'd probably have to look at some blood markers to see that stuff. But I think you could just look at imaging of the tendon. And the big way they do now is a UTC scanner where you can scan the whole tendon. It's easiest with the Achilles, kind of hard with the patellar. It's the only ones you can do it on, the UTC scan. And you scan them like, I don't know, bi-monthly or every month. And some pro organizations are doing this right now to look at the status of a guy's tendon and how it's changing throughout the years. Because if you think the tendon is starting to... Because often the tendon the structure will change to get much worse and you have no pain, you have no symptoms. But the structure's way worse, which makes you prone for tendinopathy, but also prone for rupture. So,
right, because you don't know there's a problem.
Yeah, you don't know there's a problem because it's the iceberg effect. It's under the iceberg. You don't know that you don't have any symptoms. You never tore the thing.
So the idea
Things are going fine. I use that, Nassim Taleb had that turkey analogy. You ever seen that?
No.
Where it's like the turkey is fed for 364 days of the year, and they're like, hey, my owner keeps feeding me. This is going great. And then the day before Thanksgiving, kill him.
Right.
And it's like the same thing with tendons where you're just like, hey, things are going great. My training is like, I'm doing just fine. And then one day, snap. Yeah. And it's like, we need to start finding out what are the signs that led up to that snap.
Yeah.
Or what are the signs that led up to that tendinopathy? And it's crazy that the tendinopathy and the tendon rupture, like based on that research and other ones, is like there have been signs for probably months and years before that you didn't know that were under the iceberg. And so I think that's where the future is going, is looking at that type of stuff. I don't know how I was going to relate this to your NFL guy, but I'm like, I was kind of relating it because I know some people pro organizations is like, so we going back to the start where it's like leg extension is dumb bodybuilder thing. But now I'm like some conversations I've had with friends who are actually doing the UTC scan is like, what are the major ways for them to try to clean up that tendon? Is a leg extension ISO and a heavy calf raise.
Yeah.
Because it yanks on, like you get on a heavy ISO, the muscle works so hard. It's pulling on that tendon to hopefully clean up some of that degeneration. And then the leg extension. And it's like those two, like any, I guess any quad isolation or any calf isolation. But I'm like, is this going to be, I'm like in 10, 20 years, is the future of training or like tendon rehab, because you don't want to get tendinopathy or you don't want to rupture tendons, patellar Achilles. Is the future going to be like everyone's doing leg extensions and everyone's doing super heavy calf raises? Like,
I mean, dude, listen, maybe if so, I hope I can find a way to fucking cash in on it, because I've been doing that with my guys now as a staple for a long time. And like, you know, I make posts, I put it out on social media for people to see, and I'll get comments. It's like, why do you guys do leg extensions all the time? Why do they do calf raises all the time? I'm like, why aren't your guys doing that all the time? And or the comment will be like, you know, it always looks the same. I'm like, yeah, because it's fucking important. Yeah, I believe in it, you know, and it works. Guys feel better. Their quads get stronger. Yeah. What the fuck? Am I crazy? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, the change of direction, that's not really frequently said, but like that kills your patellar tendon. Change direction.
Dude.
When you think of like running backs in NFL.
Running backs, corners, receivers, linebackers, all the time, patellar tendonitis.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, that's, they can probably, they it's hard to look at the loads on, there's a study on loading index of patellar tendon, but I'm like, I bet you the loading index, if you took one of those guys, like that would be right up there with jumping landing.
Yep.
The speeds they're doing that stuff at, and then doing, I think it's actually when you do like harder cuts, if you do like a 180 degree, like that's quite a bit more load than if you're just doing like a 45, you know,
totally
stuff like that. So I'm like, you just kill them. And I'm like, if you don't do anything, I think I say stay strong. Cause it's just like, when I say stay strong, you just got to keep up on it. Cause that stuff can go away really quick. And if you're just doing the compounds, like you're doing a 500 pound squat, 600 pound trap bar,
right?
You could be hiding a weak quad. You could be cheating away from the quad. It's like
so much.
You never know. So that's where like, yes, maybe the monotony and the boredom of getting on a leg extension again, but it's like you're just making sure that your quad actually, like, we don't know if your quad is strong unless we hop on this thing.
And yeah, because like I'm football, and it happens a lot with volleyball players too, I see, and basketball. But what if you look at those sports, football, it's a culture of squatting the most weight you can. Generally speaking, most people squat the most weight by like a low bar, hip, quote unquote, hip dominant squat pattern. And that's the only way they're loading it. And then you look and you see, it's like, well, you need to do more weight on your reverse lunges. Well, how do you do that? What's the easiest route to do that? It's by throwing your ass way back and not staying over top of your femur. So you're not really loading your quad. You're loading your hips and your low back, but you're getting fucking strong doing that. You're moving more weight. And then it becomes a chicken or an egg thing. It's like, well, oh, now I've got patellar tendonitis. I'm definitely not going to load this quad because that hurts a little bit, you know? And I don't want to do anything that hurts, you know, because that's bad. But then you just perpetuate the problem. And so more than one occasion, I get pro athletes, pro volleyball and pro football, come in. They're like, I have jumper's knee. I'm like, great. Let's do some leg extensions, or let's do some lunges. Let me back up. I'll say, all right, let's see what a squat looks like. And they squat and they're not using their knees. It's non-existent. They're basically doing like a fucking box squat, but without the box, you know, everything they can to avoid loading it because it hurts. You know? And so I stick people on the pendulum squat or the hack squat or the leg extension, where you, and position them where you cannot run. You have to load the fucker. You got to. There's no other choice. And they're so weak. Yeah. They're so, they're like, and then the, it's like the shock factor. Like, and it's not like I'm like happy that they're weak at it, as where I can take it as an opportunity to be like, oh, look at how weak you are. Like some douchey corrective corrective exercise specialist. It's just a matter of fact. Hey, you're really strong when you do it that way, using all these other muscle groups and these other strategies. You suck ass at using your quads to move weight or move load. Maybe, just maybe, we should spend time only focusing or mostly focusing on building up those tissues to be stronger. And not every time, but most of the time, pain either increases dramatically or goes away.
You gotta say every time, you know? Like, you know, I taught you that phrase. I said, never let truth get in the way of a good story.
That's right.
Yeah. Every time. 100%.
Every time. And 10%. Without fail, their knees are bulletproof.
Yeah. What have they tried when they come to you with patellar tendon? What have they done?
So what's cool is that I'm starting to see people do ISOs more often, but like the intensity of the ISO, the angle of the ISO, and the longevity of the ISO almost always are a big miss. Or it's a combination of all of them. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a combination of one of those things, or it's kind of haphazard and they just kind of do it, but they don't really know what they're doing. The most common thing still is stretching it.
Stretching the tendon?
Stretching.
Yeah.
I'm going to stretch and foam roll, stretch and foam roll. Like that's still, Which I
do that. So if it's for the quad,
yep.
Go ahead, but like. Yeah, I mean they're not.
But even then,
foam rolling the tendon, they're foam rolling the muscles, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And even then, like you're, it's just an inhibition thing, too. You know what I mean? Nothing's getting better, and that's where you fall into the trap too. It's like, well, it's the same thing. It's the same. It's a part of the same trap that, oh, I get warmed up, I feel fine. It's gonna be fine, and then you wake up the next day and you're not fucking fine. In fact, you're worse. Right? All that is just that's the on ramp to the warm up. To feeling just a little bit better and you kick the can down the road but the pain never goes away. Nothing ever gets better, but it helps. You get relief. See, there's a difference between relief and progress and temporary relief and improvement. And I think a lot of times people do just enough to get relief, but don't progressively overload the motherfucker or make it harder week to week to week. To get progress, because I in personal experience, I fell into that trap where I was getting relief, and I thought that if I strung enough relief together, that I would get better. I never did. I wasn't seeking progress, but if you don't know how to seek it, then you're only going to get relief.
Yeah, that
until that stops working too.
Yeah, because what is like, you go back to that little tiny spot that hurts, and it's like that's what you focus on. But there's no understanding that the big player in that is the progress is how strong is your quad? Like one of the big ones, probably the biggest one.
Yeah,
probably. What's your quad strength? You know, and it's like it's just not commonly, I guess, thought of that the big thing is the quad strength and that's your progress. Because your only progress now is this little spot hurts and hurts a little worse today or hurts a little better today. I'm making progress.
Right.
That's not progress.
Yeah.
Because that thing can go to 10 out of 10 or 0 out of 10. Based on a million different things.
Like, yeah.
We need to.
And everyone's done that shuffle where it gets a little bit better and then it gets worse and then it gets a little bit better and then it gets worse and then it gets a little bit better. You're not winning that way.
I wish I had a percentage because I'm always convinced that I'm like, I think most tendon pains just go away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like with young kids, especially too. Mm-hmm. Young kids who are like, well, they're like 18 and it's like they kind of go that route of like up and down, up and down. I think usually they go away because you never hear about them. We exist in the like reverse survivorship bias where the ones we see are the ones that didn't work for. We never see the one where that worked for.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
There's probably like a majority where that worked for.
Yeah.
Because if they weren't the majority, like we would be loaded with people in our DMs.
Totally.
Like thousands about jumpers. Or it would just be more common knowledge, I guess, because everyone would be seeking
Because help. Then they would care more.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There would be
But I'm like, usually I think those things kind of just go away. Or a lot of times people just, they just stop doing the thing that they did.
Yeah.
Like if they play basketball, they're 40 and they keep getting jumpers. So like, they just give up. Yeah. Well, they give up. They don't play for 5 years. And right. then they come back home for Christmas and their buddies are playing basketball. And they're like, yeah, I'm going to go play basketball.
Yeah.
And then they blow their patellar tendon.
Yeah, hell yeah. But yeah, show up and play basketball after not playing for 2 years and blow your patellar tendon. Be a man.
Many such cases.
Yes.
And when the guys tell me, like, they're kind of shameful of it. They know, I don't know why I thought I had jumper knee back in the day. And then I took like 5 years off and my boys got together and I just like went up for a dunk. I don't know why I went up for a dunk. And this thing just popped.
Right.
Like,
Tom Segura'd.
Yeah.
Disintegrated.
That was like a gunshot.
Yes.
That was a gunshot.
Yeah. Yep. And to make matters worse, he broke the fuck out of his arm. You know,
but his analysis,
so he's just mangled.
His analysis of it was spot on of like, I'm a 40 year old guy who used to play a lot of basketball 5 years ago or something.
Yeah.
Decided to do a dunk session.
A dunk contest.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
I think it was a low rim.
A low rim dunk contest.
I'm pretty sure it was low, but uh-huh. it was so true. It was like, I used to play a lot of basketball 5 years ago.
Yep. All right, Jake, we're coming up on time. I got some segments for you. They're meant to be rapid fire.
Oh, my God. I have the hardest time with those.
I know, but whatever. You know. Here's the first one. This one will be easy for you. Rant. So what's some things that you're seeing in the field, in the industry, whatever, that you're like, fuck this. I don't like it.
Oh, my God.
It can be one thing or many. I don't care.
Well, I put up these phone consults, you know, like maybe a year ago, because I was like, whatever, not even about making money, because I'm like, I would have to do so many to make a significant amount of money. But I'm like, I like getting the stories of people.
Yeah.
It helps me piece together the anecdotes are so valuable for me to piece together what I'm reading and research, and like maybe just the outliers, I guess, is oftentimes they're outliers. But I'm like, I had a call with the ATG guy, ATG proponent guy. Was just all about ATG. He has a lot of bad pains. But he's like telling me he's going to send me videos about science, like the tendon science, the way they explain the short range, long range, whatever. And I'm just like, usually I leave these phone consults after like 30 minutes pretty energized. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I helped the person. They got value. They're saying thank you. They're so grateful. Yeah. You get every once in a while, you get one of these where I leave and I'm like, I'm drained. I don't want to do anything.
I don't ever want to do this again.
Yeah. Because I'm trying to tell him. He's telling me about the tendons. You get the backward sled and it warms up the tendon the best. It gets the most blood flow. So now it's pliable and it's ready to be loaded. And it's just kind of like, all right, hold up there, bro. Like, you could do anything. You don't need to do the backward
sled.
You could do anything. You could hop on a bike for 10 minutes. You're going to get blood flow. Your tendon's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then it was like the short range and the long range telling me how that stresses the patellar tendon. And I'm like, hold up, bro. All the tendon is strain. All it does is it's crimped and then it gets pulled linear and then it just keeps going further and either it ruptures or it just goes back. If you pull too far, it goes back. And it's like, that's all it does. There's no strain. It just gets pulled end to end and it goes back. It gets pulled end to end. So like the short range, long range thing, like whatever's higher strain, that's the ticket. And like the guy just, it was just a block. He wasn't hearing anything I had to say.
Yep.
So I think that's probably my thing is like the people who've been so far educated down something which I think is objectively incorrect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that. But it's not to say that if you did the backward sled and pain decreased or you did the high range, short range, pain can decrease from a million things. And often these people are sitting on the couch and they go do some loading and they feel better, pain decreased.
Right.
Amazing. It's this distinction I make of the experience. You have had the experience. If you had left it at that, I'm completely fine. It worked for me. But then you try to explain why.
Yeah.
You try to explain why.
Don't explain why.
Don't explain, yeah.
You don't fucking know why.
Don't try to...
And then don't try and sell me on it either.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's you had the experience, leave it at that, and then you go mechanistic explanation. This is the mechanism of action. That's wrong. I mean, I do that all the time, and probably 50% of the time I'm wrong myself. But like, I think I'm less brainwashed than some of these guys because they're like, oh yeah, it's the number one thing is the blood flow. And I'm like, dude, tendon blood flow is very minimal. Tendon blood flow increases from doing any exercise in the world. It increases if you're an athlete, which if you're like an athlete, you're probably just overloading your tendon left and right. So it needs more blood flow. Probably going back to the break, the more dynamic tendon, you know, you already have the environment for the tendon rupture or tendinopathy. And then the third for blood flow, I think there was a third. I don't know what it was. Oh, people who have tendinopathy, they have increased blood flow anyway. So it's like blood flow, just stop trying to explain why, buddy.
Yep.
Like my knee got better. All right, good. See ya.
Good for you. Next.
Yeah, next.
Hang up the phone.
Yeah.
All right, the next segment is rave. So what are some things that are encouraging that you're seeing that you're like, yes, I want to see more of that?
Well, I've been on this probably for like a year I've had this thought. And then for the last few months I've been trying and I've only done one podcast I have like 30 or 40 tendon researchers I need to get on podcasts because they're like, maybe the stuff I said here, people are like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is kind of stuff I've known for like, I don't know, 1-2 years. So like,
it's old to you now.
Yeah. I get bored fast. I get bored real fast. And I'm like, some of these things they're doing in the field are like pretty groundbreaking, like the circadian rhythm of tendon. I need to know more about that. Like, is there a perfect time to train a tendon throughout the day based on like your circadian rhythm?
Sure.
Is there a perfect time to eat food and stop eating food? Obviously you want to get sunlight for circadian, whatever, but I'm like, that's kind of some research they're doing now. It's like, they could call it tendo time. Like, what's the right time to load the tendon?
Name. Good name.
Cause you go back, like, dude, let's go back to I said the circadian pool is tiny, but I'm like, when the tendon gets more dynamic, does now the circadian pool turn to 50%? And now affect that 50% based on the circadian rhythm. So I'm like, now if you get your loading done at the right time and you get your eating done at the right time, the tendon has that the yin and yang is like so powerful from this one phase because you've done really intense loading and you've like just bombarded it with nutrition and then you take all that away and let it recover. And I'm like, could we accelerate tendon rehab because of that? And then there's stuff with the IFM, the intracircular matrix, like the gel within your tendon, that stuff I want to learn about. There's like two horse researchers, most of the tendon stuff we get from horses. Cause they don't,
you can't do it in living people.
No.
Yeah.
And,
at least ethically.
Yeah. Yeah. And horse tendons are very similar to ours. And then, the other ones are just like, there's so many other like people out there that I just like, I just look up to their work so much because I've benefited so much from the work. I just want to get on a podcast because I have endless questions for these people.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get researchers on. Me and you, I'll come on your podcast because I benefit. I got social media. These people don't have social media.
They don't give a shit.
Yeah. They don't care
I'm not coming on your fucking podcast.
Yeah. 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 So I need to work on how to get them on. But I'm like, that's for me, that's like, that's the only thing I'm excited about, man. It's like, I think when I first came out to Austin, I wasn't excited about anything. I've gone through phases.
I remember.
I've gone through phases where I'm like,
you're like, I'm just living the nomad life and I've got no aim and no purpose.
Yeah.
You'd say that all the time. I've got no purpose.
Yeah.
Trying to find my purpose.
But it kind of.
And now you're a fucking.
It's been there the whole time though.
It has.
Even then I was on the patellar tendon, but I'm like, now.
You just didn't know.
Yeah. And I think it's probably the years of validation I've got of people that will message me of like yesterday, some basketball guy, like, dude, you changed my life or whatever. I did your program for the last 6 months and whatever. I'm able to play every day, no pain. I never thought this would be possible. Stuff like that. And then respect from other colleagues. It's like, I mean, we all need validation. We all seek validation. If we did, we act like we don't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, for me, it's like all my validation comes now from patellar tendon. Because if I make a vertical jump post, how many other blokes are making a vertical jump post?
Right.
I ain't standing out, or a hypertrophy post. I ain't standing out. So I'm like,
and how much more of an impact are you having too?
Yeah. It's just the same old, it's rehashing the same old stuff. So the tendon, is that the rave? I'm just like, that's really all I like 24/7. That's just what's on my mind. And I think, I'm only 5 years in. So I'm like, I think in five more years, I'm really going to have this down and surpass everyone.
Yeah.
At least in the strength world, because these researchers are doing the research stuff, but these researchers, they ain't dunking.
No, they're not. Yeah, I think you offer a unique perspective because you're doing the work that no one else, at least that I know of, is willing to put in the time, effort, and energy to read these books and speak with these researchers take these consult calls and paint the picture and put it together from a perspective from someone who's had it, who's gone through it, who's gotten better from it, who could dunk and deadlift 600 pounds and coached athletes.
Pre-lat tear. Yeah, pre-lat tear.
What are three things someone could do, wherever they are, starting now, that could get them to where you're at now?
Ooh, And like professional wise or
yes.
what? Oh, I was going to say, who was going to read all those Tenon books? And I'm like, for me, I just read them. If you were to give me an ACL book right now, I ain't even opening the thing.
You don't give a shit.
No, not at all. Like everything, even yesterday at Matt's seminar, I'm thinking the whole time how this is relating to Achilles and patellar.
Yeah.
That's all I'm thinking. Like when we get to and that's why I'm looking at
obsession is a motherfucker.
Dude, it's, yeah, it's, so what are three things people can do? Three things, man, that's tough. I was talking to a few of those young guys yesterday. I think you had left, but I hung out for quite a bit longer and kind of, I just go over my story, you know, I'm like the looking at their shoes being like college strength guys or young strength guys in the field. This conversation we had yesterday about, I'm like, I've been in this for what, 10 years, probably longer than 10 years. So like, it's very difficult to change my opinion on things. Mm-hmm. Very difficult. And these people, when you're young, you should change your opinion all the time.
Yeah.
You should read, like I saw these guys, you should read Triphasic, and that should blow,
It should blow your mind the first time you read it. Yeah.
Yeah. If it doesn't, like, you got some problem. Like, you're just not an exciting guy. Like, you should, you know, you should be influenced by you shouldn't be influenced by everything. And then it's like, you're influenced by everything, and you get disappointed every single time. And then you finally come to your own philosophy. You're like, that was all kind of a lie. And like, you're 10 years in, and it's like, you kind of see through the lies.
Yeah.
You see the kind of maybe what works, what doesn't. And then you have your own philosophy. And then everything you go to, you kind of have this little skepticism. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's where you actually have etched out your own thought process.
Yeah.
But it's hard. You can't do that when you're like 5 years in. I mean, no. Some people probably can, but like you got, that just takes time. So as far as like what can someone 3 years in, I'm like, let me just do one thing. I always encourage people, because I only know my life, my story. And I'm like, I just encourage people that, what are you going to be? Are you going to be another guy, like another vertical jump guy or another hypertrophy guy? Like, we don't really have a, who's a meniscus guy, you know?
Yeah.
Who's the, I don't know, the bicep guy. You know, stuff like, yeah, this is hyper, I don't like hypertrophy. Hypertrophy world is not a fan. But, like, I found my thing, patellar tendon, and I'm going to make my philosophy, and then when I'm dead, it's going to be out there, and then someone else is going to take that, and they're going to crush me, because they're going to take it further.
Yeah.
And then someone else is going to take it, they're going to crush me and go further. Now, this is only my life. I'm like, I'm probably speaking to a life of a hyper specialist. I don't know how many majority of the world is like that, because I think most people just want to get a job and have fun and, you know, go.
Yeah, but what I'm still hearing is like, yeah, that's true, but you found your thing, dude.
Yeah. So I think that's what it is, because even 5 years ago, I didn't care about patellar tendon. 5 years ago, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything, and I wasn't even curious. And then that Keith Barr video like started it all, where I'm like, whoa, there's actually some stuff behind the patellar tendon. I thought it was just this piece of tissue that was painful.
Yeah.
Like, and just annoying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's actually some, because I think I go to undergrad and graduate, and it's like, the tendon connects a muscle to a bone. All right, next. That's all you hear about tendons. That's it. And then maybe a little bit on storage and release, but they never explain it well. And they, I don't know, maybe they shouldn't. There's other things to talk about. Muscles are much more fascinating, or bones, I don't know, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
They do way more for getting you a girlfriend than tendons do, typically.
So, I think it is finding the thing. And for me, it took till I was, what, 27? 27.
Yeah.
Because all before then, even in the strength field, I'm trying to like catch up to Chaldeas, or I'm trying to catch up to hypertrophy guys or vertical jump guys, and I'm looking up to everyone. And then it's like, I'm just always been an arrogant guy. Like me and my younger brother are the exact same. We don't take advice from anyone. We don't want to listen to anyone. We're very difficult to work with. And, so for us to hang around each other can get
pretty, you can butt heads.
Because it's got to, there can't, like, we both want to be the leader.
Yep.
And I just found a world where this works very well. You know, I don't need to compromise to anyone. I don't need to work with anyone. I'm like, I can just develop my own thought process.
Yeah.
And then having the podcast, though, lets me be open to other things, because I get people on to
interview. And you're having people on consistently who are objectively fucking better at it, who have been doing it longer in a scientific setting than you. So, of course, you're more likely to be open-minded. But if you've got some, you know, Joe strength coach trying to chat you up about it, or the ATG guy who just did reverse sled drags one time, it's like, fuck you, buddy.
Yeah. Exactly. Like you're, there are levels. You're at level one and the people I look up to are like level 100. Of,
yes.
And then that is like, we talk about imposter syndrome. For me, it's just like, I look at people that have been doing this for 30 years. I just look at it as a year thing. They've been in this field for 30 years and I've been in it for five. Of course, I don't know what they know.
Yes.
Why am I frustrated I don't have their level of knowledge?
Yeah.
That, it's been 5 years.
Yeah. Like how arrogant is it to think
yeah.
you should,
yeah.
that you should know or could. You have to, part of being good at something is having skin in the game and doing it for a long fucking time.
Mm-hmm. I know. There's like no way around it, but it's like, it's the same with tendon pain, how everyone wants it solved right away. Whereas you, if they've had it for 10 months, you can say, maybe we're looking at 10 months of rehab.
Yeah.
You know, before you're 100%. No one wants to hear that. They want no. it done right now.
Well, they like, want relief.
Then yeah. 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 They want, yeah. But like the, it will, I'm always like,
give me some relief. I just want to feel better.
What I say, like, it will heal. The tendon will heal. It's just such a slow healing process. And you just want to make sure you're doing the right things. But it will heal. It's just like the, if I can't understand the tendons enough, I will understand them. It's just going to be 10 years later than what I wanted. You know?
That leads me to my next question. When are you going to write the book?
Oh, there's, 5 years.
In 5 years.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm even going to make. Because I think the Jumper's Knee training program that I made was like the culmination of everything I had experienced. And I'm like, I ain't touching that thing at all. And it works. It works very really well. So I'm like, I get messages every day that it works. Obviously, sometimes you have issues. And like those are the people that get on phone consults. And they're like, they're just troubleshooting what kind of issue there is. But that's like the 1%. For like the 99%, they just run it as it is. If they didn't make perfect, or if it didn't work, like maybe there's some other issues, so they go to the doctor. Because like there is differential diagnosis that they could get wrong at the knee. Many things, but like usually the people will come to me and just do a phone consult and we'll kind of piece together what they were missing. But I'm like, this goes back to the whole experience versus mechanistic explanation. And that whole program is experience. I don't care. There's no explanation of why things are the way they are. I'm like, this is the experience. This is the program. Run it. You're going to get better. And now I'm digging into the mechanistic explanation myself, yeah. which is likely to be wrong. And that's the problem, is like I'm consistently wrong on a day-to-day basis. Recently, I was on the muscle tendon unit. The muscle feeds into the tendon, like finger-like projections. And then I was kind of looking at the fascicles of the muscle, but they're angled like this. They're not running linear like a tendon. And I was like, if some of those fascicles of the muscle get shielded, does that then shield the fascicles within the tendon? Back when I was thinking they were running like this, which yeah. is like, this is like probably muscle physiology 101, but I'm just dumb. So like, I forget things, you know, I forget everything. So I'm like, but then I start looking at the aponeurosis, you know, those little like tendons within the muscle. I like the muscle fascicles run like this. And then the aponeurosis feeds into the tendon. And then that's what pulls on the tendon. So I'm like, there's really no shielding of those muscle fascicles that then shield the tendon fascicles. I had read it in a book from like the 90s, which was completely inaccurate. And then if you look at a muscle like the soleus, if you actually get a good image of the soleus, it is loaded with aponeurosis. So it's like, that's a muscle where I think it's like mainly an isometric muscle. And then the tendon is doing a little bit of lengthening, but it's like, there's really no, you think of the pec muscle, like runs, the fascicles run like linear. You stretch the pec and you contract, stretch, contract.
Yep.
You get a nice pec pump. You get it with your bicep brachii. These are the muscles that have that architecture. You go to the soleus, it is nothing like the pec and the bicep brachii. So I'm thinking like when you start training muscles and we go full range of motion and stuff like that, is the soleus even going to be like, do we need to train different? You know?
Yeah. Is that, it doesn't apply.
Yeah.
It's structured different.
The muscle architecture is completely different. And when you get an Achilles tendinopathy, Achilles rupture, it's always soleus involvement. Soleus is always the huge player in that. So I'm like, is there, the way we think about training muscles, like a seated calf raise, up and down, slow, whatever. It's like, is there a better way to do for soleus? Or does it just take care of itself? Because, you know, you start to look at differences with the human body. And then you're like, we need to train this way to target this. Whereas it's, I think the other, on the other side, you're just like, actually the body just takes care of it itself.
Yeah.
You don't need to do anything different. You know, it's already had to figure it out. What was the question?
When are you writing the book?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No clue. No clue. Because I'm like, what do I even do it on all tendons? I'm like, a lot of the upper body tendons I know a little bit about. Should I just do patellar tendon? I know quite a bit about that. But then they're so similar to the Achilles. So many things go through my head. But I'm like, dude, I'm making like my business is still like working really well. I don't need to worry about money. I have no pressure to get this book done right now. And I want to get it right, you know? I could probably get it done today.
Yeah.
And there's going to be tomorrow, I'm going to be like, oh, that was wrong. And
right.
I don't want to live with that.
I always say I try and live by that to a certain extent where it's like, I don't want to be right. I want to get it right. I don't want to be right. I want to get it right. I don't want to offer up my dumbass mechanistic explanation of the way I think it works. I want to find out how it works, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then do that.
There are some things though, I look back and then we're wrong. There are some things that
even
that exist today. Like I had a video about the training tendons for 10 minutes and the refractory period. And I was like hyper about that, how like the first 10 minutes they adapt and then they go refractory. And I was like, oh, we need to hit ISOs right away before a warm up for everything. And people message me now like, hey, I'm doing, should I do a bike warm up? Or like, well, your old video said this. And I'm just like, it was wrong.
Yeah, I was wrong.
I was wrong. Don't use that.
Now I know differently. I wonder if it pertains to your book. It's like, you know, at some point, you just got to write the son of a bitch. And then in 5-10 years, be willing to be like, I have something better now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know.
So, hey, so look, because you've mentioned Jumper's Knee Protocol. Well, maybe you haven't mentioned it by name, but you've mentioned the program, Jumper's Knee Protocol. You have multiple programs. And people can find you. So can you talk a little bit about your programs, where people can find you and how to connect with you?
Yeah. There's no asking questions about the programs, just buy a program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just buy them. That's it. Yep. Jake Tura, T-U-U-R-A, Instagram, Twitter. You don't know Twitter at all. Are you Twitter's?
I have Twitter.
Twitter's pretty good. I love Twitter.
I know. I'm fucking
I gain a lot from Twitter, and YouTube. And then, yeah, I mean, I guess the books is like hypertrophy clusters, get bigger, stronger, faster. You want to get big and not be useless. That's what you do. Vertical jump protocol, just like vertical jump training. Some French contrast. You guys were hating on French contrast yesterday. Jeez. that's another thing. I'm like, is French contrast the best? And I'm like, it's in the program. Follow the program.
Do the program.
This is not an argument of if it's the best.
Listen, and here's my thing. It's like best, worst, whatever. Does it work? Yeah. Is that not good enough? Yeah. What the fuck are we talking about? Yeah. Like, did you put 3 or 4 inches on your vert over a 12-week period? Shut up. You know? Oh. And if you don't know, buy program, do program.
It's the optimizers. They're trying to optimize. And I'm all about sub-optimizing. That's where the money is. Sub-optimize. Do sleep 2 hours and then go still train. Like yeah. there's a certain energy you can have about being in suboptimal states. You don't get being an optimal boy.
Yeah.
You make sure your whole day is planned out.
Imagine perfectly. Living your whole life just trying to be optimal. Just trying to do everything.
I purposely do things to be suboptimal.
Yeah.
Yeah, purposely.
Because then, you know what the irony of that is? You just become a slave in a cage to that, dude. And anything that knocks you off your perfect little ledge, if you didn't get butthole sunlight for 10 minutes first thing in the morning, your day's ruined. You know, it's like, well, I didn't do the thing.
I think it becomes
neuroticism. I think
the problem, it becomes the goal.
Yeah.
That is the goal of your life, is to optimize. Whereas if you have a better goal, like...
have a better goal.
Like dunking a basketball, there's no way you're going to you go from not dunking to dunking. You're not going to do that by optimizing.
Yeah.
You're going to do that by toasting your patellar tendon. That's not an optimal thing. Yeah. Yeah. That's where they can find me.
Jake, I appreciate you being on. It was a great time as usual. I think I'm going to title this either, Tendon Talks with Jake or just aimless.
It did go to the tendon.
It went tendon quick.
I think it might have went more aimless, but it's just, I got nothing else on my
aimless head, so. Tendon talk.
I got nothing else going on to think about. So
that's good. That's why you're good at it. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Go follow Jake if you don't.